Tamyena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shigro Shiyuta Parakamalam Shigram Vaishnavamscha Shirupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sarivam Sarvaitam Savadutam Vrijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivasakam Dvitamscha He Krishna Karna Sindho Dinabandha Dugatpate Kopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshri Prishubhano Sudha Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakapa Trubhyascha Kripa Sinubhyavascha Patitanam Bhavinebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shedvaita Narshivasani Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 18, The Battle Between Lord Bor and Hiranyaksha. Text number 8. Sa
Dhamma
Udhasta
Udhasta
Salilasya
Salilasya
Gochare
Gochare
Vinyasya
Vinyasya
Asyam
Adadat
Swa Satvam
Satvam
Abhishtuta
Abhishtuta
Vishvashrija
Vishvashrija
Prasunai
Prasunai
Apuryamana
Apuryamana
Vibhudai
Vibhudai
Parshitaha
Parshitaha
Hare
Hare
Sadam Udastat Salilasya Gochare
Sadam Udastat Salilasya Gochare
Vinyasya Tasyam Adadat Swasattvam
Vinyasya Tasyam Adadat Swasattvam
Abhishtuto Vishva Srija Prasunar
Abhishtuto Vishva Srija Prasunar
Apuryamano Vibhudai Pashito Re
Apuryamano Vibhudai Pashito Re
Sagamudastat Salilasya Gochare
Sagamudastat Salilasya Gochare
Vinyasya Tasyam Adadat Satat Svatat Satvam
Vinyasya Tasyam Adadat Svatatvam
Abhishtuto Vishva Srija Prasunar
Abhishtuto Vishva Srija Prasunar
Apuryamano Vibhudai Pashoter Pashyatore
Apuryamano Vibhudai Pashyatore
Apuryamano Vibhudai Pashyato Re Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Lord placed the earth within His sight on the surface of the water and transferred to her His own energy in the form of the ability to float on the water. While the enemy stood looking on, Brahma, the creator of the universe, extolled the Lord, and the other demigods rained flowers on Him. Prabhupada's purport. Those who are demons cannot understand how the Supreme Personality of Godhead floated the earth on water. But to the devotees of the Lord, this is not a very wonderful act. Not only the earth, but many, many millions of planets are floating in the air, and this floating power is endowed upon them by the Lord. There is no other possible explanation. The materialist can explain that the planets are floating by the law of gravitation. The law of gravitation works under the control or direction of the Supreme Lord. That is the version of Bhagavad Gita, which confirms by the Lord's statement that behind the material laws or nature's laws, and behind the growth, maintenance, production, and evolution of all the planetary systems, behind everything is the Lord's direction. The Lord's activities can be appreciated only by the demigods headed by Brahma, and therefore when they saw the uncommon prowess of the Lord in keeping the earth on the surface of the water, they showered flowers on Him in appreciation of His transcendental activity. So the text again. Sagam udasta talilasya gochare vinyasya tasyam adadatsva sattvam abhishtito vishva Shrija prasunar apuryamano vibhudai pashitore. The Lord placed the earth within His sight on the surface of the water and transferred to her It is all energy in the form of the ability to float on the water. While the enemy stood looking on, Brahma, the creator of the universe, extolled the Lord, and the other demigods rained flowers on him. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaya Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvam Deve Gauravani Vajarne Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatya De Siddhantara. Here in Srila Prabhupada's purpose, we're challenged to think about whether or not we really believe what's being explained here, whether we actually have faith that there was a boar who was half the size of the universe. And it wasn't an ordinary boar, it was a supernatural, spiritual boar who's God, the all-attractive boar. Seems quite contradictory to us. And that there was a demon who was equal to another half of the universe, and that some billions of years ago there was a big fight between them, and before the fight this earth that we're resting on was put on the water to float. It seems alright as long as we're not challenged. And of course the devotees don't walk around in the hallway saying, "Do you really believe there's a boar half the size of the universe?" Couldn't be. That there was some demon with horns and tusks, and he was fighting against his boar. And this earth that we're on was put on the Garbhadak ocean. But here Prabhupada says that there's no other explanation. No other explanation, at least of the fact that the reason why this earth is floating, or why it was floating on the water, is that there must be a person who's floating it. So this is a real challenge, whether we believe that there's a person behind the universe who's controlling things, or whether we think everything is going on somehow or another by accident. This is the only really important point, whether it was a boar, big or small. The important point is whether there's a person behind the universe. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, asatyam apratishtam te jagaro horanishvaram aparashvaram sambhutyam kimanyat tamahaitukam. They say that this world is unreal. It has no foundation. It has no God in control. It is produced of sex desire and has no other cause than lust. That's the one theory. And Krishna says before that, pravritim cha navritim cha jana navidur asara nasocham napichap charo nasatyam teishu vidyate. Those who are demoniac, they don't know what's to be done and what's not to be done. Neither truthfulness nor cleanliness nor proper behavior is found in them. And then Krishna says, because they don't believe that there's any rules and regulations or any controller behind the universe ultimately, therefore they feel free to do whatever they want. They don't feel that there's any higher authority other than their own whimsical minds to follow. And then Krishna says, etam drishtim avashtavya nashtatmanona buddhaya pravatyukra karmana shaya jagatavahita. Following such conclusions and loss of themselves, the demoniac, they create horrible, unbeneficial works which are meant to destroy the world. In other words, the demoniac, they do follow authority. They follow authority of lust and anger and greed. That's their authority. And they think any other authority besides that is imagination. But why are we so confident that there is a person behind the universe? Because we can see that there is a person behind everything. That without a person, this material nature doesn't move. Does anyone have an experience that within our realm of control that there is something going on without a person behind it? That this microphone, ultimately we have to see that there is a person behind it. Just like yesterday, the electricity was going out. So no one thought, well, it's just by some accident that the electricity goes on, and certainly it's by accident that it'll go off. We understand that there is a person behind the electricity, ultimately generating it from the electrical powerhouse. And we assume that there's a person who's going to fix it. We don't think it'll just by some accident it'll get fixed. When we see a car riding down the street, we don't think that by accident the car is driving down the street. We understand that ultimately there's a person in the car who's driving it, hopefully, or else it's going to crash. That a person made the car, a person's controlling the car, and in the absence of a person within the car controlling it, it just goes off and crashes. It can't drive down the street without direction. Without a person directing things, things won't be directed. We don't find that the material nature is directed without a person behind it. Does anyone have an experience of material nature working in a purposeful, directive way without a director behind it? Yes.
Well, one could say that when you see the wind blowing through, you don't see a person blowing the wind or cutting the wind.
Yes.
Because
you don't see the person, therefore. But that's all right. We're not talking about that. You don't see if there's a person behind it. But within your realm of experience, besides what you can't perceive, do you ever see without a person there is directive, there's material nature? The question is whether the wind and the rain is working purposefully or not. So that's a question. So you're assuming it may not be working purposefully. But my question is not whether the wind and the rain is working with some purpose behind it, it's whether there's a person behind it working. But we're giving it because we can't perceive wind and rain, the person behind it. But my question is, when you see a purpose behind the material nature, for instance, a car riding down the street, then we understand wherever we see a purpose behind it, we can understand that there's a person behind it. Wherever we see direction behind the material nature. Now the question may be raised, whether there's any purpose or direction behind the wind and the rain. Now we can assume that if there's no wind and rain, it would be difficult. So we appreciate somehow or another that the wind and rain are being supplied to us. But whether, now if we can see from our experience that wherever there's a purpose behind the material nature, directive purpose behind it, that it's being moved in a very systematic way, we always see that there's a person who's systematically moving it. So if we can explain how the rain is being systematically moved, then we can, by analogy or inference, we can understand that there must be a person who's moving it. Because otherwise, how is it moving systematically? So we never see that material nature by itself, just like we may take this purple basket there. We may wait for millions of years, but it's not going to do anything. Because material nature, without a person moving it, doesn't do anything. That's our experience. Isn't that right? That's our person. Now, if we can explain, for instance, that where the clouds come from, that the sun dries up the clouds. So what a nice system. The scientists, they can create such a nice system. Do you ever see that the scientists have decided to save the inhabitants of the desert and they created a machine in the sky that dries up the ocean water and then evaporates it to form clouds, and then they send clouds by, you know, they give them a passport or to go to Iraq. Clouds say, well, we don't want to go, it's too dangerous going there. You might get shot. But they send the clouds over there, and then they rain the clouds down. The rain comes out of the clouds right over Iraq and fertilizes the water. Can the scientists make such a nice machine? No. So, the scientists, with all their intelligence, who were relied upon to either create the machines or to decide whether or not how these things are going on in the universe, After all, if there were no scientists and we weren't born during this particular time, and someone told us there was a person behind everything, we'd naturally accept it. There wouldn't be any doubt within our mind. It would make complete sense. But because the scientists are complaining that how there can be a person behind it, therefore we have some doubts. After all, the scientists who have given us everything we have, refrigerators, computers, cars, we owe so much to them. How can we doubt their word when they say that it's all going on by accident? So, assuming that the scientists are authorities, now, how much of an authority are there? Because they're claiming something came about by accident, and they can't create the accident. So they're not intelligent enough to create the accident. Why should we assume that they're intelligent enough to figure out that it was an accident in the first place? On what basis are they saying it was an accident? They don't have enough brains to figure out how to create the accident. So how can they figure out that it was an accident? It's not consistent. So if they don't have enough brains to figure out how to make the accident, then there must be someone who is intelligent enough, even if we call it an accident, to have created it. Because otherwise, from our experience, without direction, directed things wouldn't go on in a directed way, in an intelligent way. And when we see that there's intelligence behind it, how water is evaporated and provides us with water, water is evaporated from a salty ocean, provides us with water, it seems a very intelligent way of doing things. So seeing the intelligence behind it, we have to assume that there must be a superior intelligence, because they can do it beyond what we can do. Does that make sense? So that we may not be able to see, just like all the intelligence in the universe, but if we examine the Srimad Bhagavatam, we'll be able to see at least there is intelligence behind the universe. Just like, for instance, there is a ball floating in the air called the sun. We call it the sun. And it has supposed to be thousands of times bigger than the earth. Now, no one will deny that. I don't think we have too many skeptics here who deny that there is no real sun, and the sun is just a little ball anyhow, and who knows what's going to happen to it. It may fall down at any moment. Chicken Little and the sky is falling. So most of us don't think like that. We have, every day we go to sleep, and we don't worry, sleepless nights, what's going to happen? You know, maybe the sun will crash into the earth and I'll die tomorrow. Y2K or something. Sun 2K. No, we have confidence. But why do we have confidence? According to the scientists, they have no idea at all how it's working. They say gravity. They just give it some name, gravity. But of course, gravity doesn't work according to the way they say it works. Anyhow, if you really examine their scientific lore called gravity, then it's not very consistent. For instance, a person's swimming in the water, keeping out of the water, but if you shoot the body, because there is no soul, anyhow, according to them, then as soon as the body dies, it's the same body, but then it sinks. So why does the body swim for one moment and then sink the next? What's the difference? Same body. Why is it what law of gravity? It likes living bodies, but it doesn't like dead bodies. Why does it sink? What is the scientific explanation for it? Same body, according to them. There's no such thing as a soul, so there's no living thing in the body. Just chemicals. So why is it one moment it swims and the next moment it sinks? What's the law of gravity that makes it sink? Why is it that a pin, such a small little pin, you can put it on a balloon and it'll float up in the air, but why you put it in the water, it sinks. But why a log weighing tons will float? According to the law of gravity, why doesn't the pin float and the log sink? It seems that the law of gravity is schizophrenic. Because then they'll come up with a law called Bowen's, the scientists will come up with another law to explain that. called buoyancy. But of course they can't explain why a living body floats and a dead body sinks. They don't have any explanation, so what they do is they just ignore it. Anything that doesn't follow their law, they just ignore and hope that no one brings it up. It's called the emperor has clothes on. Or why is it that the clouds floating in the air have billions of tons of water? Why do they float? And why at one moment they're floating, next moment all the water falls down? Can anyone here make something that will float in the air that weighs billions of tons? What about it? 1 pound? Can you make anything here that will float in the air that weighs 1 pound? No, it's actually the scientists, they have no idea what's really going on. But they know how to manipulate material nature because they're technicians by experiment, and they're able to have some things happen according to their direction, so-called according to their direction. They can put hydrogen and oxygen together and make water. But can they make as much water to fill up an ocean? Can they get that much hydrogen and oxygen together? They're very proud. They can get hydrogen and oxygen together and make it enough so that you can, you know, put your toy boat in. But who put all the oxygen and hydrogen together to make the oceans? Can anyone say? Whatever there, yes. Yes. Well, we have no reason to disbelieve it. Just like we make perspiration, all right, from our bodies comes perspiration. So, why can't there be a person who, from his body, comes perspiration the size of an ocean? Why not? Otherwise, how did all this water come? Where did it all come from? Just like an ant. If an ant heard that from a person comes enough perspiration to drown the little ant in, he'd say, oh, come on. Do you believe that? You know, two ants are talking to each other. So why not? The question is, why couldn't from a person perspiration come more than perspiration coming from us? That's how we get water, so why can't it be a person who has oceans of water? Now, whether or not Lord Vishnu has four arms, he has a helmet, you know, whatever he has, but our point is that there's a person behind everything. And the challenge of the scientists is make something out of material nature, because science means there's a theory, there's an experiment, there's an observation, and there's a conclusion. So do something with material nature that without a person behind it, it's going to work in a very systematic, intelligent way. Show us something with material nature that does that, that we can see from our experience. That one moment there was some earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, with ether, and the next moment was, you know, it was creating something. It was creating a car, or it was working in a very systematic way. It became a machine, created more earth, or it started to create factories or whatever. No, the scientists, they can't do anything like that. They can't show, they can't have any experiment where material nature works on its own in a very logical way without a person directing it. Prabhupada used to give the example that if a scientist could create a male machine and a female machine, like a female Rolls Royce and a male Rolls Royce, when they came together they made little Rolls Royces which grew up and became big Rolls Royces, then everyone would be very impressed. That was very nice. You know, we can all get a Rolls Royce and just take care of your bring up your little Rolls Royces, give them the proper amount of gasoline and oil, and they grow up to be big ones. You can drive them around the car when they make more and more Rolls Royces. but they can't make any machine, male and female, that makes more machines. But Krishna has made, in practically every species of life, so many machines, because the body is just a machine, and they make more machines. So who's a better scientist, Krishna or these little tiny scientists who can't do anything? Therefore, the conclusion is that Krishna is an extraordinary scientist, as he says, Lord Brahma says, gets chakshya esha savitasa kalagrahana raja samasya suramurte teja. He's created a sun, it's moving in some orbit, everyone can see it's in orbit, it's very regular, we've created these watches, all based upon the movement of the sun. The watch didn't come about by accident. And nor is there any watch that can measure exactly how precise the sun is. It took scientists to create a watch to try and duplicate the exactitude of the sun, but they can't do that. They're not so intelligent. Therefore, the person who created such an exact object that moves in such an exact orbit must be considerably more intelligent, especially because of the vastness of the sun compared to the earth. We tried to create a little satellite, but it can't stay in the orbit for too long, and no one can really predict where it's going to be the next moment. But this big satellite, the sun, thousands of times bigger than the earth, is providing us with heat and light, which we need to sustain life on this earth. And if there was any deviation in the orbit of the sun, then we die immediately. But no one's worried about it. Somehow or another, every day, it's moving so nicely. The scientists, they say, we're moving in rapidly through the solar system on this earth planet. At least that's what they say. But we don't feel any bumps. It's not like you wake up one day and everything's bumping along and what's going on, hit a hole in the universe. That if this earth was moving through space, that's quite a smooth ride. Who made such nice shock absorbers that this huge planet we don't even feel a little bump? In other words, anyone who's objective and sees what's going on in this universe has to conclude that it's been very nicely made. And therefore, it was nicely made by someone. Accidents, if you throw up someone who has a handful of dust in their hand, it stays there. But if they just throw it up in the air, no one knows where it's going to go. So if the universe is just like one big, you know, throwing up in the air all the planets, then why are they so nicely being organized? Why is it not random? We don't look up in the sky and find one planet crashing into the other all day. Bing, bang. Therefore, Krishna says, Gama Vishaja Bhutani, Daryamaham Ojasa, Pushnami Chosadi Sarva, Samobhupa Rasatmaka. I enter into the planets, and by my orbit, they all stay, by my energy, they all stay in orbit. A kopya so rachayitum jagaranda kopim, et chakti asti jagaranda chayaniranta, andanta rasta paramanu chayantrastam, govindam adi purushantamaham bhujami. So Krishna says, ekopyaso. So eka, by one, I enter into the planets. Not one planet, but into all the unlimited planets, millions of planets, koti. Ekopyaso jagata rantum jagaranta. Ekopyaso rachayitum jagaranta koti. Rachayitum. I enter into the planets, and not only that, but yet chakti asti jagaranda chayaniranta. And because I enter into them, the universes go on. And then andanda rasta paramanu chayanta rasta, and he enters into the paramanu also, into all the different atoms. And therefore he stains all the universes. So Krishna enters into each one of the universes, and the universes enter into him, and he enters into the atom. And therefore everything goes on intelligently. That's why there's a uniformity within this universe. It's not that in one part one law works, in another part another world law works. Everything is working very uniformly. Just like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Kalosmi lokashe kritra rido lokansi mahartam yahapravita kriti pi tvam nabhi vishanti sarve evastitat pratnyuke shriyoda. Time I am, the destroyer of all the worlds. So Krishna said he's time. So one thing we can see is that although everything is changing, time is not changing. It's not that you wake up one day and you read the newspaper that time died. Time got so old, it died. And therefore nothing changes anymore. Now the law, the force behind everything, which is causing everything to change, that's not changing. It's not that time is slowing down here, it's getting, you know, everything's creaking, coming along, time's getting worn out, and things aren't changing as quickly as they used to. Now the law which is changing everything in this material nature, the energy, that's not changing at all. So we can see that there is a controller behind everything. Otherwise, why is everything changing? So at least we have to conclude that time, even if we say it's not intelligent, but still there's a force behind everything. But if time wasn't intelligent, then why is it creating things, maintaining them, and then destroying them? Why isn't things get destroyed and then get created the next moment? Why is it there's a logical sequence behind time? Everything works very... otherwise something would be born and then die. Why does it grow old first? Why is it there's a systematic way that time works? It wears things down. So even time works according to some law. So the question is who the lawgiver is. Who is the controller? It's not me. Although people say that I'm the controller. And then you ask them, all right, well, you know, it's a little cold here in Belgium. Can you kindly increase the heat a little bit? Since you're the controller. But they can't do that. They can say they can do it, but when it practically comes, they can't do anything. They claim they're God, and then probably say, well, then we'll kick on their face with boots on. The so-called God. And what can they do? The so-called gods, they get a toothache and they're praying to the dentist to please save them. They can't even control their toothache. And Hiranyakashipu, he claimed he was going to become God. He had some power according to the Bhagavatam, but he couldn't stop time from killing him. Similarly, the so-called gods of these universes, they can't stop time even for a moment from killing them. So what kind of God are they? They're not the controllers. But there is control behind the universe, but it's not them. Therefore, we have to conclude that there's a controller who is not being controlled by the material nature, because otherwise, how is time under his control, which is not being controlled by the material nature? And it's much more intelligent than we are, much more powerful than we are. Who that controller is, we may not know, but we have to conclude that there is a controller from our own experience. Because we have nothing more than our intelligence and our experience to rely upon to make any decision. Now the scientists, with their lack of experience, with their lack of intelligence, they've convinced everyone that there is no God and that the only purpose of life is to be surrendered to your senses. Whatever your senses and mind dictate, you do that. So that's God. They declare that the senses and mind are God, and you have to follow them. And that ultimately, you have to serve your senses according to how the scientist has dictated to you. You have to buy their products. It all gets down to economics. The scientist has certified that in the cereal is the magic ingredients of X, Y, and Z. And if you take it, if you eat the cereal, you'll become more than God. You'll become the best God in this universe. So the scientists have affirmed that. So you should buy the cereal and eat it, and you'll become the best, most intelligent, most creative, most productive, most powerful person in this universe if you eat your Cheerios every day. That's more or less their conclusion. But does anyone have that experience by eating Cheerios every day? But the scientists say that that's what will happen. But no one has that experience. So what can the scientists really do on the basis of their conclusion that they are God? How can they really control the material nature? As I pointed out, they can't stop themselves from dying, from growing old and dying, nor can they stop anyone else. And what is the control they can have? They can destroy things that they've done. You know, they can press a button and blow up a city, part of a city. So that's what they have to be proud of, their ability to destroy things. But as far as ability to save things, what can they really do? What have they done to save anything? Does anyone really stop growing old anymore? What are the signs that they can cover it over? They spend billions of dollars with makeup and convince everyone if you can't see it, it's not there. All the wrinkles buried beneath, you know, tons of makeup, it's not there anymore, so therefore you're younger. Just think young. In any case, it's all... The point behind this is that even if we can't see the boar fighting against Hiranyaksha, although it is possible, according to the Bhagavatam, if we hear with submission, one day that will be revealed within our heart, we'll be able to directly experience it. But even if now, the whole point of this philosophy is to convince us that there's a God behind things. And if God was just a little person like the Wizard of Oz who could stand behind a machine and create some sound effects, it wouldn't be a very impressive God. But our God creates universes, and from His body, the perspiration from His body fills up half the universe with water. When He's lying in sleep, the universes, millions of universes emanate from His body. So that's our God. Most people's gods, when they go to sleep, they're unconscious. But our God, when He goes to sleep, He creates universes. So what to speak of when He's awake, what He does. So that has to be God, Chinta Shakti, inconceivable power. Otherwise, why would we call something God? God's a person who can create some ashes. Well, anyone, give me a piece of paper and a match, I'll create ashes too. But that doesn't make me God. So our God is here. He's just a little potency, a little avatar. He's fighting with another demon, half the size of the universe, and floating the earth in its orbit by its potency. Any questions? Stop there. Any scientists here for some challenge? We've looked it through our telescopes. We didn't see any boar. Scientists who... There's so many planets up there. One more planet. There's so many planets. Okay, we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.